You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to another edition of the Valentine's Views podcast, Giants fans. A week ago, we had Matt Waldman of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio on with us, and we spent an hour or so talking quarterbacks, but that is not all that Matt does. Matt discusses, Matt is knowledgeable about all of the various skill positions. So today, we have Matt joining us once again, and what we're going to do is go through the receiver positions as they relate to the Giants. Matt's on the line right now. How you doing today, Matt? Thanks for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Ed. I had a good time talking with you about quarterbacks, and this should be just as fun.
Well, yeah, you know, I got to give you a hard time, though, because since the last time we talked, I saw that you did Patty Traina's podcast. I saw that you did Big Blue Kickoff Live with John Schmelk. You know, come on.
Hey, man, I'm telling you, I'm a mercenary. What can I tell you?
Oh, it just tells you that you're a popular guy and that people value your opinion, you know, as we do here. So that's good stuff.
Hey, man, I'm glad that people want me back.
But you know, Patty and I used to do a show together, you know, back in the day, and I always give her a hard time about stealing my guests.
Well, you know, she does fine work as well, you know, and it was kind of funny because when I heard you talking about that earlier, and then she contacted me, and then I got the contact from Fiegels and Schmelk. That was pretty funny too. So I thought, yeah, it's going to give me a hard time coming back on this show, but whatever, it's worth it.
Of course I am, you know, but hey, it's all in fun, and you know, it's all. People love talking about the Giants, and so let's do some of that, Matt. And let's start with this: the news that broke yesterday was the Giants, you know, signing Sterling Shepard to a pretty long, I think, 4-year extension, supposed to be in the neighborhood of $41 million. Just, you know, from your perspective, a quick thought on the kind of player Sterling Shepard is and the extension that he got from the Giants.
I think it shows that they're looking for someone that they want to build this receiving core around, and they feel like he's the type of worker, the type of route runner, the consistency factor in his game is good enough that you want to lock him up for a while. And I get that. He's a player that, you know, reminds me a little bit of a former Giant that I really loved when he came out in the draft, and that was during the time of the Matt Leinart era, which was Steve Smith. I was a big fan of the Giants, you know, Steve Smith, and before he got hurt, because he could do a little bit of everything. He could stretch the field for you with his tremendous quickness. He was a clutch player. He was a terrific route runner. You could play him a little bit outside as well as inside. And I think that Shepard is a player that I think they hope can develop to where he has that kind of Steve Smith upside. And I think that he's already, even if he doesn't reach that point, he's already a reliable guy that you can lock into place and know that you're going to get someone who can make the correct route adjustments, be there for his quarterback, create a good target for his man, and be able to help them move the chains as well as occasionally make some big plays.
It's funny you mentioned Steve Smith. I always liked Smith, but toward the maybe it was after he started to suffer some injuries. I always think of him as catch and fall down Steve Smith.
Yeah.
You know, guy that make the catch and get down, no yards after catch, nothing.
Yeah, and that was it. After the injuries, that pretty much did it for him. And I think before that, he was a guy who made Matt Leinart look a lot better than maybe Leinart was. So it's just one of those things. Sometimes it's a shame, but career lifespans are short in the NFL, and injury is a huge factor for that.
What is your take? Obviously the Giants signed Golden Tate, and I think we've talked about this a little bit. What is your take on the concern that some people have that Tate and Shepard are guys that have similar skill sets and that it might be hard, for them to play together?
I think there's some validity to that if the offense doesn't show the imagination it should. But there are some differences here that are enough to kind of give them separate roles. For Tate can be more of a flanker in the sense where he's tough after the catch. He's a physical player. I think he's a little better than Shepard at winning the ball at the catch point, and he has the speed to get deep. And we saw that with him in Seattle when he had the connection he had with Russell Wilson. In Detroit, the more recent exposures people had of him, they think of him as a slot receiver, and they forget about the fact that he was an outside presence who could win the ball in the air, who could get deep, in addition to the fact that he runs like a scat back with a little power after the catch. So this is a physical player, and you get, Shepard's kind of a craftsman. You get a real physical presence who can block, who can also be a presence after the catch in a way that can stretch the field horizontally for the Giants because of the presence of Saquon Barkley. You can split them out on opposite sides, and you got players that defensive backs and linebackers have to be equally concerned about when they have the ball in space.
The other thing, I guess, that I think about is the fact that you have, offenses aren't static. These guys don't line up in the same spot, every single time. I mean, unless you're running the Mike McCarthy, offense 95% of the time in 11 personnel, which Giants fans are familiar with thanks to Ben McAdoo. Guys move around. So, I think there's that benefit too. These guys aren't always going to be in the same place, the same alignments.
Absolutely, because they're looking for matchup advantages, and you're going to see certain things where maybe teams will look at Shepard and Golden Tate, and you'll see defenders kind of look at them as the same kind of role in a certain situation and realize that they've kind of gotten outfoxed there and put into them. In a situation where Tate might have a little bit more of an advantage with certain types of routes or a certain type of look, and that can lead to some mistakes in terms of opportunities to create pre-snap mismatches or lead defenders into a false sense of security that they may be running, blocking on this play as opposed to going out for a route. So there's a lot of little things you can do, and I do think they're different enough players that it's. That people are just kind of looking at what happened lately with Tate in Detroit as opposed to what he was in Seattle.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens once the Giants, get into the lab and get all these guys on the field and see what they can create. But I think we know, heading into the draft here in a couple of weeks, that the Giants, I wouldn't consider them to have a complete, receiving core by any stretch of the imagination. So I would suspect, I mean, at some point in this draft, that they have to dip into the receiver pool. So let's do that right now. And what I really want to do, we're kind of going to go through sort of where the Giants pick and the players who might be value at the different spots in the draft. And to be honest, I mean, looking at Tate, looking at Shepard, looking at Corey Coleman, who they brought back, I mean, the one thing that the Giants don't have is that bigger bodied guy, that outside guy, unless you want to make Evan Engram into that guy. So I'm kind of going to ask you to, as we think about it, to lean toward talking about those guys that are a little different type of player than what the Giants have now.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I think before we do that, let's just think about that for a second. And two little caveats I'd like to mention before we really delve into this. One is that it is quite possible that they decide that they want to make Evan Engram a guy that plays more on the outside and be more of a receiver, and then they draft a tight end, and there's plenty of great tight ends in this class, so where you can get a complete tight end who's a better blocker than Engram, who might be a better interior receiver than Engram, and then you could put Engram on the outside and let him win with his size and his speed and leaping ability. And the other caveat is this, is that if you talk to anybody in the scouting community who's worked in that community, you learn pretty well that there is more variation in grades for receivers among teams or between teams than any position that they look at in the NFL. And a lot of that has to do with, like you were alluding to, the type of position, the type of role that you're looking at, whether it's a slot receiver, a split end, or a flanker, or if you're looking at players who can maybe be a combination of two to three of those roles. And that can filter your pool in a way where one team may have a second round grade on a player, and three other teams may have a sixth round grade on that player. So as we go through this, you know, you'll want to keep that in mind, because most likely, you know, I'm going to name some players and we're going to talk about them in the second, third, or fourth round, and some of them may go much higher or much lower.
Interesting. But, you know, at least it goes back to the fact that there is no such thing as a hard and fast rule of, you know, who the best player available is, because two different sets of eyes, two different teams, you know, even different scouts within certain teams will always see players in a different way. And it depends largely on what they feel like they need, what their scheme is, and what players they're teaming those guys with.
Right.
So where I want to start is at number six. Now, interestingly, we were kidding about Pat Treanor in Locked On Giants the other day. And full disclosure here, I actually did Patty's show earlier this week myself.
You know,
See, there it is. Well, you know, I used to co-host over there, so once in a while I drop by, you know, just so folks remember me. But it's funny because she asked me what I thought if there was one sort of outside the box move that nobody had really thought about that would kind of turn the Giants draft on its head. She asked me, you know, what that move would be. And I need to start at number six. I keep hearing that the Giants are doing an awful lot of work on TJ Hockenson. And I think there's no wide receiver that I can think of that would have value at six. But I can't necessarily see the Giants doing this at six with all of their other needs. But I keep thinking, you know, if they wanted to turn the draft on their heads, Hockenson might be a guy to look at six.
Oh, and I think it's definitely something that you have to look into, because he is that good of a player. He can start right away for a team because he is that good of a blocker. You can use him on the wing. You can use him in line against defensive ends and outside linebackers. You can use him as a fullback. You can split him in the slot or outside. And he can do it all. He's got the size already to anchor and hold up. He's a good puncher. He understands how to come off the line with his back low and his pads low. He can turn very quickly, turn defenders quickly. He's a good lead blocker. So you get someone who's already a better blocker based on what we saw last season than Evan Engram. And you get a player who also can work the seam downfield and win contested plays and run after the catch. So if you wanted to say, listen, we have our receiving core, we're just going to put Engram, you know, at split end, or put him at flanker, and we're going to put the other guys where, you know, where they need to be, and we can rotate Coleman in, and we can use Latimer in certain leverage situations if he continues to show up. And if that's the case, then you end up consolidating your position. And part of that is that you can use Evan Engram as the second tight end. He doesn't have to be on the front side of blocking schemes. So he can be the guy who can sneak out of the backfield or sneak out off the line and use him on that level. Or you can be more multiple in your looks. So you have two tight ends and you split one out pre-snap, you know, and motion them to the receiving part so that you can take advantage of what the coverage shows you And now you're looking at a Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez type of situation in terms of how these players could be used in the way that the Patriots did years ago. And that I can see why they're studying that, because when you can have multiple tight ends, that creates a lot of issues. The Colts did a lot of great work with that last year, where they even ran things like three verticals or four verticals using three and four tight ends and looking like they were going to, you know, they were going to run the football and just, you know, compress the box and play, you know, short yardage football. And then next thing you know, three of those tight ends are running verticals off out of the formation and they're getting big plays out of that. And you could see how the Giants decide, listen, we've got Saquon Barkley. We want to look like we're going to be a physical, powerful team, but we also want to be multiple enough that we can spread the field. And as soon as the defense decides that they're going to use certain personnel and take advantage of them for that. So I love the idea. It's a very creative one. We'll see if they take it seriously enough to go that route.
I have my doubts just because of all of the they've spent so much time talking about how much they need to upgrade their defense, you know, how much they really could use a right tackle. And of course, you know, the quarterback discussion, which I don't think they're going to go quarterback at six, but it's an intriguing idea. I think I would be shocked if they pulled the trigger on it at six.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if they went, really, they could probably go a round or two later, and there's some guys that they could still do that with. And guys like Dawson Knox of Ole Miss is a very fine blocker who has that same versatility and can also catch the ball a lot better than people think. And he's a terrific athlete. He's just underrated because he wasn't used a lot as a receiver at Ole Miss. But he could be a bargain version of that for Hockenson. And there's a guy I really love at tight end by the name of Trevon Wesco from West Virginia, who's a former quarterback who, when he came, a former high school quarterback, but he was literally praised as part of the offensive line for West Virginia last year in terms of how well he blocked. He's about 270 pounds, unbelievably quick, really fluid hips, can run those type of whip routes that you see slot receivers run. He doesn't have great speed, but he's very good after the catch. And suddenly you have a guy who played a lot of fullback and H-back and also inline work in Trevon Wesco, and that could accomplish the same thing. You could get him maybe on day two or maybe even day three.
Nice. We'll get more into the day three, you know, type players as we get along here. But let's go to 17, where I think it might be more likely that the Giants, I still think they're going to lean toward quarterback or adding to their defense here. But if they wanted to add to the receiving core, I think Hockenson, you know, but the way I understand it, the way, you know, from what I've been told, I don't think Hockenson's going to be a choice at 17. I think he's probably going to be off the board by then. But I think maybe we start to get into a couple of the bigger bodied wide receivers that might be available. Guys that you think might be available at 17 who would be value, you know, guys who could get picked in that range.
There are a lot of guys, because there's even talk that maybe teams are starting to figure out that maybe we should wait on receiver unless we're absolutely sold at the guys like the next Calvin Johnson. Now, I think there are a number of guys in this class who are good enough to be franchise caliber receivers, but it doesn't seem like there's a consensus about that. But as a result, if these guys are on the board, I think Hakeem Butler would be an amazing pick for the Giants if he somehow slips that far, and he probably will. He's 6'5", 227. He runs those whip routes at 6'5", 227. Watch him against Iowa last year, and you'll see him beat a cornerback on a whip route, you know, working inside, back to the outside, where he has to drop his weight and flip his hips in succession and beat the man so badly that he had to be tackled so that he didn't catch the target beforehand and basically committed interference on it. You don't see receivers that big run that unless their name is Calvin Johnson. That's how good of a, how fluid he is. Now, he has some issues with drops. And so people will often say, we don't want a receiver who drops the ball. But you have to understand that the way the NFL, if you're really studying receivers well, you contextualize what those drops are. And there's three types of drops that are common with receivers. There's the focus drops, which are just basically the equivalent of, say, you're teaching your daughter how to drive, and you get to the stop sign, and she's like listening to the radio or telling you something and turns and doesn't see, and you go, hey, there's a stop sign, and she has to stop real quickly, you know, and maybe she ran through the stop sign a little bit there. It's one of those things that's just more of attention to focus. He used the correct technique. He knows what to do, but he's too focused on maybe the next task or a task that you know, looking at the defender who's coming or trying to tuck the ball and run. That's mostly Hakeem Butler's issue. You know, but people often make it out to be a more serious issue, but those serious issues are technique driven, you know, not using the hands in the correct position based on the location of the target. And to me, that's more like, you know, if you're using the driving analogy, it's kind of where you're going to hit the gas pedal instead of the brake pedal because you just got distracted as a beginner driver. And that can be dangerous, obviously, but you can go back to the parking lot with the student driver and kind of say, here, we're going to go 5 miles an hour until you figure out how to hit the brake and the gas, you know, at the right moment and not get distracted there. And then the most dangerous one is where you may know how to hit the brake pedal, but you don't know how much pressure to put on it consistently. And you keep rolling into the intersection with the gas truck bearing down from the opposite side. And those are people who don't track the football well. They just don't understand how to really track where it should arrive and where they should reach for it. Guys like Sammy Coates had that issue. Troy Williamson had that issue. Jake Reed back in the day had that issue, and that always plagued their game. And so people sometimes conflate drops with that. And Hakeem Butler is a guy that I think is probably I think he's the best receiver in this class. And I think he's the most versatile. And if they want to be multiple and use that versatility, he's the guy. Miles Boykin, though, he's the real combine wonder. I mean, this is a guy with slot receiver metrics, 4.0720 shuttle, 6.773 cone drill, 43.5-inch vertical leap, and he's 220 pounds and 6'4", and he doesn't have those hands issues at all. He tracks the ball extremely well. He's good after the catch. He's strong. He runs terrific routes. He breaks back to the ball extremely well. So you can rely on him in a variety of ways, and he wasn't talked about a lot because he didn't have a great quarterback, and people wondered if he was truly that fast or not. But you can see it on tape, and it matches up with what you see. And then another guy who can be multiple is A.J. Brown, who's certainly, you know, more of a slot player, and I don't think the Giants will go after him, but he can win at the catch point, and you could probably put him at flanker because he's very good after the catch. But I think they need more of a split end, and then that guy means – if you're going to look for a split end in this class, DK Metcalf's that guy. DK Metcalf, you know, he doesn't have great bend with the way he drops his weight in his routes, in and out of his breaks. And I worry that tighter coverage will exacerbate that issue where now defensive backs in the SEC and all over college are just scared out of their minds about getting beat deep by him. So they give him a lot of cushion. But the same thing goes with him is I think he's so physical. The way he uses his hands, he's so violent with his hands that he can create runways just doing that. And then he gets up to that 4.3 speed that he has, and he's tough to tackle, and he can win the ball well at the catch point. He has occasional technique issues with his catching, and he also drops passes. But again, the technique is fixable. It's just a matter of understanding when he needs to put his hands up high for certain types of throws, as opposed to using a lower hands technique. So he's a little less refined than Butler, Boykin, and Brown. But his physicality and how you would use him as a split end, if that's all you want to use him for, it's like going to the hardware store and saying you want a hammer, and you're not going to get all caught up in whether or not the hammer can turn into a wrench. He's a hammer, and he's a guy that's going to get downfield and just hammer the deep zones of a defense.
So the one name that you mentioned that surprised me a little bit as we were talking about that particular point in the draft was Miles Boykin. Do you really think that he would be in the conversation that early in the draft, or is he a guy that would come a little bit later on?
I think he's probably going to end up in the second round. He shouldn't be, but I'm just looking at how I grade guys. So to me, he's that good. He should be in the conversation as one of the top three to four receivers in this class. But most likely, he will probably fall to the second round in this class. And it'll be a kind of a quiet thing. And we got to remember that, you know, past examples, we often talk about players and who we think are going to be first or second round guys. And in the past, we didn't think Paul Richardson would be a second round guy for the Seahawks. We didn't think Dante Pettis would be a second round guy for the 49ers last year. So I'm kind of open to that because Pettis was my first ranked guy last year on the board, just ahead of Ridley and DJ Moore. And down the stretch, you could see that Pettis started to flash some of those skills once he got healthy. So, yeah, I don't know if Boykin will be someone that they may count on and say, we can probably get him maybe in the second round. And if they do, that'll be quite a bargain.
And as you said, you know, at the top when we started to discuss this, teams have such a wide variety of grades and opinions on wide receivers that you never know, you know, how some of these guys are going to fall. You know, so the Giants have the pick at 37, and you know, and you talked about Boykin. You mentioned Dawson Knox. I don't know if Dawson Knox is a tight end who would be in consideration that early. Just, you know, off of your grades, you know, who might some of the guys that they could be looking at, you know, at 37 be? Maybe a couple guys we haven't talked about yet.
Certainly. You know, as another tight end, Irv Smith is kind of a Delanie Walker type, and I would say if you can feel he's a good blocker, he's not quite as big as Hockenson, but he holds up very well technique wise. And I think he's the best receiver after the catch, even though he's not the quote unquote most athletic, but he's the most polished tight end in this class. And, you know, comes from great bloodlines from Irv Smith Sr., who played for the New Orleans Saints and the 49ers for quite a long career. And he is a good tight end who can be split outside and be versatile and could give you that Delanie Walker type of player. But in addition, in terms of other wide receiver talents, N'Keal Harry might be there, you know, and a lot of people see him as a big slot receiver. And I think that may be the case, but he's also a guy who, you know, can win one-on-one in the deep game with his physicality. And he's also a guy that you can move around. So if you're looking for multiplicity in terms of multiple looks, in terms of how your receivers can move around at different positions, Harry can also play two to three different roles on a team. So he would fit in well in that regard. And I think that those two guys probably make the most sense at 37. You might see if a team, I would say this is doubtful based on how he performed at the combine, but if a team is just really in love with Kelvin Harmon's tape and they feel like we love his physicality, we like how he can run double moves, we feel like he can be a possession plus kind of split end for us, an Allen Robinson type, but maybe not quite as fast or dynamic, Kelvin Harmon is a guy who wins really well at the catch point, and they may see that. Another one might be, and it may seem like an odd pick, but it's Paris Campbell. And the reason it's going to seem odd to everybody on here is going to be pretty obvious. They see him as more of a slot receiver. There's a lot of talk in mainstream draft media that he can't get deep or that he wasn't used a lot as a deep player. And he's only 6 feet 205. But we got to remember that Paris Campbell is a hyper elite athlete. I mean, this is a guy with, you know, 4.3 speed, extreme quickness, great explosiveness and leg strength. He's an excellent blocker. And he just wasn't used much as a receiver. One of the flaws Dwayne Haskins had that we talked about in the last episode is sometimes he missed some of the opportunities to throw the ball deep where he had open receivers in terms of the leverage pre-snap. And it was usually centered around Paris Campbell in the slot. But Paris Campbell can get deep. He actually knows how to make the good drive step, the one long step into the hard break, which is the hardest thing about route running for the more difficult timing routes. So he may be inexperienced, but he's not raw. He has a good, solid base of fundamentals as a pass catcher, as a route runner, and he's someone very good after the catch. And I could see how maybe they decide that they like his athletic ability and they want to get creative with that. I don't think that's the best call. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm trying to think of guys in that range, in addition to maybe Deebo Samuel, who would also kind of fit in that range. But he's kind of, I think Deebo Samuel can be a little bit more of a Jimmy Smith type of player, the old Jaguars receiver, or a Sterling Sharp type of player, where he can be a little more physical than you would expect, but he's extremely quick and fast, can win after the catch. And he's a guy that I've always joked around is that he could kill you with the single death blow, with the deep shot or 1,000 paper cuts running through and beating people in the way that Odell Beckham Jr. did, back at, when he was starring in New York. So Samuel can also give you that special teams ability. So those are some guys that might fit in that range. It's a wide range of possibilities, and we'll go from there.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out. Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, comma, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It was always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, "Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back." If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, "Everything okay in there?" "Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog."
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
You know, it's interesting because it just seems like, and it seems like as I look at this class, if the Giants want, to upgrade at wide receiver, it just seems like somewhere along the way, there's going to be value because it just seems like there's a fair amount of depth, a fair amount of variety in types of players, pretty much all the way through this class.
Yes. And, the guy who might creep up into that second round because he had a good pro day was J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who's 6'2", 225, known as a box out receiver who wins in the red zone, but also has shown some pretty good route running skills. I'm a little concerned about his hands. I think that he catches the ball well in terms of catch rate. But like Cortland Sutton, the guy I was a little concerned about this way too, and it played out in Denver early on, is that he doesn't have the greatest technique and he fights the ball a little bit. But I agree with you. I think there are a number of players in this class who in the second, late second day, or early third or late third, who really have an opportunity to evolve into starters, and I'm looking forward to us talking about some of them too.
All right, so let's frame the next part of this a little bit differently. I'm going to ask you to kind of put your GM hat on here for a second. When we look at the Giants on their current draft board, they go from 37, which is early in the second round, to 95, which I think is the last pick of the third round, last or second to last pick of the third round. So there's a huge gap in there. But they have 8 day 3 selections. And one of the things that I expect is I expect them to, whether it's late second, early third, whether it's, you know, fourth round picks, I would expect them to use some of those day 3 picks to move up and target, you know, a guy. Let's suppose that they've gone through, they've picked up a bunch of defensive guys, they picked up an offensive tackle, whatever, maybe they picked up their quarterback, they haven't touched receiver or tight end yet, and you're sitting there early in the third round. Is there a guy that you can see? Maybe it's one of the guys that we've already talked about. Maybe it's a guy that we haven't mentioned yet, say early third round, where you would bang the table and say, if we've got to give up a couple of assets, let's go get this guy, you know, because he can come in and start for us and help our offense right away.
Yeah, and I think we'll start with guys who might drop. You know, if a Miles Boykin or a Hakeem Butler drop, then I would be throwing the table up against the wall if they weren't listening and get fired probably at that point. I also think, you know, if a N'Keal Harry dropped, it would be interesting to consider that. But at tight end, I'd probably be banging the table for someone like Dawson Knox. If Dawson Knox is still there in the early third round, it's time to consider him seriously as that asset. If you believe that Evan Engram can be that guy, or if you know that your draft board has value below that, because I think there are receivers who are going to be available in the fourth or fifth round who you're really going to be able to get and get some value out of. But if there's a receiver we haven't talked about, that if I was really, if I look at his pro day and I look at what he has to offer and I'm pretty intrigued by him, I think he has some drops occasionally, but I like what I've seen of him and he's proven an awful lot. Me personally, I'd probably say I wouldn't bang the table for him here, but I could see how a team might, and that's Jalen Hurd. Jalen Hurd out of Baylor is a former 5-star running back around the time where he was the starter ahead of Alvin Kamara and ahead of John Kelly at Tennessee, and he was around the same range that, you know, he was playing around the same time that Derrick Henry was playing. He was 6'5", 240, kind of sloppy feet, but powerful, could catch the ball extremely well, showed some speed and burst, but he didn't really want to be a running back. He wanted to be a receiver. Tennessee didn't really want him to be a receiver. He ended up getting hurt. He ended up deciding to move on and transfer to Baylor to be a receiver. There was a big kind of divorce fallout in the media between this. And Tennessee's coaching staff, let's be honest, they've been kind of a magnet for trouble, you know, during that time. There was a lot of bad stuff going on about that whole program. But Hurd got the brunt of it, like he was the bad guy. But all I know is that Hurd shut up, went to Baylor, put his head down, and became a guy that when you look at him on tape, you're like, this guy looks like he's been playing wide receiver since high school. He runs good routes. You can see him do the technically sound things that I've talked about with, you know, a guy like Miles Boykin. He can get a little bit better with not gathering his steps into hard breaks, but that's a thing that a lot of young receivers have to learn. But he's got the size. He can break multiple tackles in the open field. He's a smart runner. He can catch the ball and go up and win it. He's used more often at Baylor in the slot, but he should transition to becoming a split end in the league. And again, you know, 6'5" with, you know, with that kind of quickness and good route running and showing the ability to manipulate coverage and find open zones, you could start him out in the slot and put Engram outside. And so you kind of slowly feed him into the offense as a contributor and let him win where he's comfortable. And in a year or two, he could wind up being that split end for you. And what's even cooler about him is that because he had to work on his footwork so much as a route runner, Baylor still used him as a short yardage running back or occasional running back as a change of pace on like gap plays, you know, trap and power and toss. And he looked even better at Baylor as a runner, not production wise, but just purely from his footwork and decision-making and quickness, because he worked so hard on that, it actually helped his game as a running back. So you could see this big old guy come in and kind of be a change of pace to Saquon Barkley, and suddenly you're looking at two five-star, former five-star running backs, one of them who you could occasionally use, and if, again, if you're trying to be multiple, you know, not only did you maybe have gotten a tight end, or maybe you didn't yet, but you may have that. You also have Hurd, who can be a split end for you. You could even probably put him at wing back because he's big enough. And if you wanted to add weight and decide you wanted to make him maybe a tight end, I don't think they would do that. I think he's got too much potential as an outside receiver. But if they wanted to go that route, they might be able to do that with him too, because remember, he did play at 240 at one time at Tennessee, and that was when he was a younger player. So this is a really intriguing prospect who I think that there might be a team or two that really likes him. You can see how scouts might be pounding the table.
It's really interesting. All right, so now we have hit the day three, you know, portion of the draft, and we've already mentioned a lot of names already. And I have to admit, one of my favorite time-wasting sort of activities is to go to the Draft Network or to go to FanSpeak and mess around with the mock draft simulators at those two places.
Oh yeah, that's great.
You know, and to be honest, early in the process, you know, I'm not a person who studies guys the way that you do, and the way that a lot of guys do, you know, to the point where they know everything about everybody, basically. But there's a point in the process where I'm actually using these simulators to get to know some of the players, especially the Draft Network is kind of cool because it lets you pick up the bios on the players as well,
right,
as you research them. But my sort of long-winded point here is when I do these 7-round mock draft simulations for the Giants, one of the things that makes me crazy as I do these is when I get to day three, when I get to round four, to round five, even round six, I look at the board that I'm presented with, and it's wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver. I can go down like 25 names and 19 or 20 of them are wide receiver. And I'm like, I don't want a wide receiver right now. You know, I took one already, or I want to do that later. But the point being, there's a lot of depth on day three. So what I really want you to do is kind of cherry pick a little bit and talk about some of your favorite guys that could go later in the draft.
Oh, absolutely. All right. So Jalen Hurd will probably be one of them. We already talked about him. A guy that that probably could be liked by scouts is a guy by the name of Travis Fulgham out of Old Dominion. He's 6'2", 215 pounds. He's a rugged rebounder with some suddenness at the, you know, with his first step. He's kind of a potential possession plus receiver with some deepness, some deep game to him, but he's a little bit more of like a 4.58 40 guy, so he's not going to blow the top off of a defense. But he's a little bit more physical and rugged, kind of a Michael Crabtree aspiring type of player who could be interesting there. If they want to go big slot and they think the guys they have on the outside are good, and they feel like they want to roll that way, Little Jordan Humphrey out of Texas, who's also a former running back, 6'4", 210, has some of the best mitts in this class. And there are a lot of good guys in this class in terms of being able to make the catch. Kind of a Marcus Colston type of player who can run, but he can run after the catch in a way that Colston couldn't. You could probably even use him out of the backfield occasionally, but he makes excellent adjustments to the football. He's just not very fast. You know, Tyree Brady is an interesting guy, or Emmanuel Hall. We'll talk about two of them, and then I'm going to wrap up with a third guy after this. But Tyree Brady isn't very fast. He comes across at 4.74, and that I don't know if that's really indicative of his speed. I've seen him get through past guys in ways that seems a lot better than he must have really good quickness. We didn't get a chance to see that on in the metrics in terms of his workouts, but he's very quick off the line. He runs good routes. He has an incredible concentration at the catch point, makes some really difficult catches, but he's kind of in that realm of like if AJ Green was the top model on the board, you know, like he's the luxury model of this type of receiver, and say Josh Reynolds of the Los Angeles Rams is kind of like the mid-range model, you know, Tyree Brady's kind of like the compact model at the rental car place, but you might be able to upgrade it enough that it could do a lot of good work for you. If you're looking for a classic split end who's just graceful, can become a really good deep ball specialist and maybe expand his game and become something more, Emmanuel Hall of Missouri is a really graceful guy with 4.39 speed, kind of in that Justin Hunter mode, though, because once he drops the ball, he starts to drop more, and he loses concentration. And I think he has to continue to work hard to focus his game. A guy who will probably fall to day three because of an off-field situation is Preston Williams. And we talked about the A.J. Green model. If A.J. Green's the all-pro model in terms of ability, Preston Williams could turn out to be the starter model for that, which is pretty darn good. He's 6'4", 211. He's got 4.5 speed. He's quick enough. He has good enough acceleration. He's terrific after the catch. He wins the ball well in the air. He could play flanker or split end. He actually runs good routes. And he's a guy at Colorado State who was a former five-star prospect at Tennessee, same program where Jalen Hurd left. And Williams has really – I think Williams is one of the better – prospects in this class. He's in my top 10 on my board, but will probably drop because he had a domestic violence issue during his Tennessee career. And, you know, obviously the NFL, however you want to look at it, if you want to look at it the cynical way, and I'm more on the cynical side of things, you look at it, and the NFL has more of an optics PR issue about this than they do about really caring about it. If you look, you know, on the level of like, you know, in terms of how that goes. Now, I look at it this way. I think everyone cares about domestic violence and, you know, who has a good head on their shoulders. But at the same time, you know, without getting too deep into it, I just say that, you know, some businesses in America don't have a policy on it at all. Some basically would suspend people if there's a conviction. Some companies would suspend based on an arrest. There's a lot of variety. So we tend to hold these, you know, hold the NFL to an even higher standard than what our own corporations do. But with that said, you know, that sensitivity in terms of the public eye sometimes creates a need to drop players just based on the term. And when you look at Preston Williams, what he did was wrong, very clearly. Let me point that out. But from what I read in the police report, it was basically he got in an argument. He's a young kid, got in an argument with his girlfriend. His girlfriend wanted to leave the apartment, and he blocked the doorway and tried to hold her from the doorway. Didn't hit her, didn't push her, didn't do any bodily harm to her. Now, I'm not saying that holding someone back from their will, being threatening on that level, is not wrong. It's definitely wrong. He definitely deserved to be arrested. He definitely deserved to be punished. But it's different than, say, there's a different degree of that than, say, Tyreek Hill strangling his pregnant girlfriend, you know, or Dede Westbrook kicking or strangling his pregnant girlfriend. You know, and these are very difficult subject matters. But, you know, if you want to have a more in-depth thought about this, I actually talked with a therapist who works with people who have been perpetrators in these issues in domestic violence or assault in the past. And I've had him give his takes on my RSP podcast, you know, about this and how it relates to the NFL. But Williams has gone through counseling. His teammates said that he was a sketchy guy at Colorado State when he arrived. He's become a much different guy since that time. They've seen him grow up a lot. If there's a team if the Giants feel like they want to take a chance on a guy like that, Preston Williams would be that guy that might be worthwhile in the fourth round. And I have one last guy I want to mention, and I have a feeling that this is the guy. I'll just say that I'm pretty sure from my sources that that the Giants are very interested in this guy. And I'll just leave it at that. He is at Monmouth. I don't remember how to pronounce it. Monmouth University. And that's Reggie White Jr. Reggie White Jr. is about the dimensions of Marvin Jones of the Detroit Lions. You know, he's about 6'2", a little over 200 pounds. He is extremely quick. He is fast enough. I mean, you look at his game, and let me see if I can pull up his information here, because he's an excellent young player that, okay, he runs a 4.45 40, so he has the deep speed you're looking for. He has a 4.0 720 shuttle, which is very good, you know, near elite caliber in that range. 6.77 three cone drill, and that is as good. That's actually better than that's as good as Miles Boykin, who was the top guy in that area. So he's quick, he accelerates well, he's fast enough to get deep on you, and he wins the ball with grace, winning the ball in tight coverage extremely well. And I've heard scouts say that he's the best prospect to ever play at Monmouth, and that includes Miles Austin, who played there. I think he can be that possession plus player who could either play flanker or split in and win contested catches, be a red zone threat, win after the catch. They'd like to see him be a little bit more physical, and they'd like to see evidence of him step up and be that big play guy. But I think he's going to get drafted late, and I would not be shocked at all if the Giants are looking at him.
Look at you coming on the podcast and breaking some Giants news. Look at that.
A little ace up my sleeve for a couple of weeks. So, I can tell you that there's interest there. I can't go into detail who and why, but I know who was there, and I know what they were looking for, and I know that it was a very special case for them to be there. And
you're talking about like at a local pro day?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that there were people there that were very interested in him, and that, you know, you wouldn't normally see some of those people there. And I'll just say that, you know, if the Giants pick him, I would not be surprised at all if they can get their hands on him.
Interesting stuff. As always, Matt, we always appreciate you coming on and breaking these prospects down. And, you know, now you've set a new bar, because now you're coming on here breaking some news.
You know? Hey, listen, I don't normally get this stuff, and when I do, I don't normally share it. But this is one where I can feel comfortable sharing this one just enough that's it. But I'm not normally the insider type of guy with that. I just break down prospects. I just happen to know this one.
All right. Hey, why don't you, you know, we did this last week, but why don't you go ahead and you know, let people know about your website and your draft guide again before I let you go?
Sure. You know, you can find my draft guide at mattwaldman.com. And you get, there's a tour of my draft guide, the pre and post draft editions of that you can look at from the past. And you can find my work at www.mattwaldmanrsp.com that provides links to my YouTube channel, the RSP Film Room, and lots of different analysis from myself and Mark Schofield, as well as Scott Bischoff, occasionally some work from him. And then in addition to that, I have a podcast, and I found out my podcast broke the top 150 in sports and recreation recently. And that's the RSP cast, Matt Waldman's RSP cast. So you can kind of find my work at those three ranges, and you can find me at Twitter at Matt Waldman.
All right. Thank you very much, Matt. And we will, you know, when the Giants, you know, draft Reggie White Jr., we're going to have to give you a shout out and you know, make sure that the world knows that you had it first.
Okay.
All right. Thanks again, Matt. We'll talk to you later.
All right.
All right, Giants fans, that's our show for today. We thank Matt Waldman for spending some time with us and educating us about wide receivers in the 2019 NFL draft class. As always, we thank you guys for listening, for supporting the show, for supporting our work at BigBlueView.com. Remind you to please make sure that you subscribe to Big Blue View Radio on all of your favorite podcast applications. If you're not up to date on all of the content at BigBlueView.com, please check that out. Please join the community. We've got a stable of fantastic writers on the site. We've been joined most recently by Matt Williamson, formerly of ESPN and currently host of the Locked On NFL podcast. Also have quarterback guru Mark Schofield, longtime Giants beat writer Patricia Traina, who also hosts the Locked On Giants podcast, Chris Flum, Dan Pizzuta, and myself, covering the Giants from as many angles as we possibly can, giving you all of the coverage that you need leading up to the draft. And we hope that you're familiar with it. We hope that you enjoy it. All right, thank you, Giants fans. And we will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.